Daniel, as we look at where we left off this morning, and we were looking at the message that Gabriel was bringing to Daniel about the last days in the nation of Israel, and the fact that God had another 490 years that he wanted to deal with Israel. He had 70 weeks of 7 days, which the days were really units of time, which are 7 years, so it would be 490 years. And this morning we left off halfway through verse 25. Let's pick it up at the beginning of verse 25 again, and we'll continue on. Know therefore and understand that from the going forth of the commandment to restore and build Jerusalem unto the Messiah, the prince shall be 7 weeks and 72 weeks. The street shall be built again and the wall even in troublous times. This morning someone asked me after the service, how come he didn't just say 69 weeks? Why did he go, as he said here, 7 weeks and then 62 weeks or 72 weeks, 62 weeks? Why did he do that? Well, you remember the first thing that was beginning, where all of this would begin, was the decree to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. Jerusalem had been totally destroyed, flattened by the Babylonians. As we mentioned this morning, there were 3 decrees that went out by various Medo-Persian kings that the people could move back and they could begin to restore the land. But there had not been any decrees to rebuild the walls. The walls had not been specifically addressed, but rather the city itself. And we know that Cyrus said that the temple was to be rebuilt. And if you go and look at, and this is why it's really neat to read the Old Testament and look at it and read and see how the books interact with one another. When Cyrus gave the decree, Ezra went back to rebuild the temple. Ezra lived a little bit earlier than Nehemiah. It would have been a contemporary, would have probably been a young man when Daniel was an old man. And Nehemiah probably was not born when Daniel was an old man. But they lived consecutively in order. And the events that we're talking about as far as the establishment of the day to go forth where the 490 days begin was a decree that was given at the time of Nehemiah. The decree that was given by Cyrus at the time of Esther was to rebuild the temple. And Ezra went back to Jerusalem to help with the construction of the temple. And you can read about that in the book of Ezra. And here are the obstacles that they came against. Well, as we saw this morning, they met with troublous times in Jerusalem at the time of Nehemiah. And you can read about that in the book of Nehemiah. I was talking to someone again this morning about the fact that Satan does not change his tactics very much. The very tactics that he used to try and prevent Nehemiah from building the temple, building the walls of the city of Jerusalem and reestablishing the city, are the same tactics he uses today. He tried to get the people to turn against Nehemiah, to tell the people that they shouldn't follow Nehemiah, they shouldn't believe Nehemiah. He tried to had the enemies of Israel talk to the people of Israel in their own language. You can go and study that. And the emissaries that Nehemiah had sent out to talk to Sanballat and the other people that were really the enemies of God that had come to discourage the people and prevent the walls from being built started speaking in Hebrew so that all the people could hear. And the emissary said, no, we know Syrian, so you guys just talk in your language and we'll talk to you in your language. Don't speak the language of the people. But they kept speaking the language of the people. We see that today the enemies of God do the same thing. They know the language of the people. They know what Christian jargon is, and they'll come and talk Christianese, if you would, but they'll have attached different meanings to it to try and get you to quit following and quit doing the will of God. They also tempted them, various temptations. If you'll just come out here, we've got all these wonderful things we can give you. You don't need to be building walls for defense because we'll be here to protect you, to try and get them to compromise. All the same tactics that Satan uses today. Those were the troublous times. And so consequently, the Holy Spirit and the Lord directed Gabriel to tell Daniel that there'd be 2 periods. The first would be a 7-week period of 49 years. This would be the time that they were rebuilding the walls, which was 49 years. and it was troublous times. It took a long time to get these walls built because of the enemies of God. But the walls were rebuilt, just as the Lord said. And then the last 62 weeks, or 483 years, we see that these were the last 62 weeks, rather, of times 7. I can't do math in my head very good anymore. But that period of time, less than 49 years, would be the period till when the Messiah entered into Jerusalem. From the time the walls were actually built, that was the end of the 49 years. The last 62 weeks from that time would be the time that Messiah entered Jerusalem. And so it says here that the Messiah, the Prince, shall be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. The street shall be built again, the wall, even in troublous times. After the 62 weeks, so in other words, after the 62 weeks, shall Messiah be cut off. Now, this is a shock, I'm sure, to Daniel. The Messiah had been promised. The Messiah was promised way back in the Garden of Eden to Adam. The Messiah, as we studied this morning, was coming through the line of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He was to be the blessing, the means by which Abraham would bless the whole world as the Messiah came. And we talked this morning that Jesus came not just to take away the Jews' sin, but to take away the sin of the whole world, that all men could be restored unto God again if they would just accept the gift of salvation. And so for Daniel to hear that at the end of the 62 weeks, after the 7 weeks, then the 62 weeks, the Messiah is going to come in, the Prince, and he's going to be cut off. And the term that they're using here for cut off is really the death penalty. It would be the death penalty. And it also means that he's going to be having a violent death. So if you can imagine this Messiah, the one that you're looking for as the answers and hopes to all the issues to cause a rebellion of Israel to come to a cease forever and the sins of the world to be taken away. And this Messiah is going to come, but he's going to be cut off in a violent death. He's going to receive a death penalty. I'm sure that Daniel had questions. What is this about? What is this about? How can this be? And he says, after 62 weeks, shall Messiah be cut off? And then Gabriel tells him why. But not for himself. But not for himself. This death penalty was not for him. Here you have the gospel message given to us in this vision or this encounter that Gabriel has with Daniel. At the heart of the gospel is what? That he who was without sin came to become sin for those who were sinful, that they in turn could experience his righteousness. So in other words, this Messiah was going to be cut off. After he entered into Jerusalem as the Messiah, as the Prince, he would receive the death penalty, have a violent death, be cut off, but not for himself. He would be cut off for others. Who were the others? The whole world. He would be paying the penalty for the world's sin. And this is what he is telling him. And he goes on and he says, but not for himself. And the people of the Prince that shall come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary. Now he talks about a second prince. He says the first prince, the Messiah, is going to be coming in and he's going to be cut off. But then he says something very interesting. The people of the prince, a small p, those who have the King James Bible, a small p, the people of the prince, it's speaking of the Antichrist. And it says, the people of the prince that shall come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary. Now, there are some specific events that were going to occur. Now we see that these events occurred at the end of the 62 weeks, but they also, the 70th week hadn't begun. And so we see that there's 69 weeks that have occurred, the 7 weeks and the 62 weeks, and now the Messiah is cut off, and then we have, it's like a parenthesis that occurs. Because the 70th week doesn't start. And the angel Gabriel says there's some other events that are going to occur, but we've already had the end of the 69 weeks. And so we see that it's as if God puts everything on hold when it comes to the nation of Israel, as far as His plan in dealing with them. But what happens is He introduces us to a second prince. And this prince is going to be the one that is going to come in the last days, that is going to come and establish the beginning of the 70th week, which we'll see in just a moment. But before He comes, He's going to send His people. Now, the people of the prince, who were these people of the prince? Well, one has to go back into history. And you will see, if you look at what happened to the nation of Israel after Jesus was crucified. Remember, Jesus was standing at looking at the temple, and the disciples were overwhelmed with the temple, and Jesus was talking to them about the significance of the temple. And He also foretold that the temple was going to be utterly destroyed. There would not be one stone left upon itself. The temple was going to be utterly destroyed. And if you would have, Herod had spent, I think it was 46 years building the temple. Herod's temple. And that was the one that he had made improvements on. And there was a lot of gold that had been placed in the temple. And he had spent all this time building it, and it was a beautiful structure. It wasn't near the structure that had been in the days of Solomon before the Babylonians had destroyed it. But still, it was a beautiful building. And the disciples were standing there in amazement of this beautiful building, and Jesus said it's going to be utterly destroyed. That happened. The thing is, it happened in 70 A.D., and how was the temple destroyed? Who destroyed it? If you go back and look in your history books, you see that the Roman soldiers are the ones that destroyed the temple. The Jews had an insurrection against Rome, and so Rome came in, and they're going to silence these insurrections. And so they came in and they leveled the temple. And there wasn't a one block that remained upon itself. The only thing that's left is a foundation wall, a supporting wall of the west side of the temple. On the Temple Mount, and that is referred to as a Wailing Wall today. It wasn't actually part of the temple. It was a retaining wall. A lot of people get confused. They think that it is actually part of the temple. It wasn't. It was just to hold the Temple Mount from eroding and to hold the temple so that everything that was built upon it would remain strong and firm. It had nothing to do with the temple itself other than a retaining wall. That is all that is left. The temple itself was utterly destroyed by the Romans, just as the Bible said it would be. That happened in 70 A.D. We also see that she'll come and destroy the city and the sanctuary. The Romans leveled the city of Jerusalem at the same time. Because they were going to silence this insurrection. They also ransacked and took all the valuables. They took the gold when we were in Israel. Our guide was telling us that there had been gold in the mortar, that they had placed. Herod had placed gold in the mortar to add brilliance to his building. When they started to burn the building and tear it down, the gold was melting. So they literally tore the rocks to get at this gold, there is nothing left. And we see that this happened in 70 A.D. So you look here, who were these people? They were the Romans. So it tells us that the Roman Empire, and if you look at Daniel's, going back to Daniel's statue that he had at the beginning of the book of Daniel, when he was in the courts of Nebuchadnezzar and Nebuchadnezzar's dream, we had the two legs, which were made of iron, the original Roman Empire. That's took the place of the Greek Empire. And the Roman Empire did have two legs. It had two capitals. There was Constantinople and Rome. And we see that those two legs, it says, go down into the feet. And in the feet, there was toes that were mingled where it was iron and clay. Now, iron and clay don't mingle well. They're not a real strong substance. So the second Roman Empire was not going to be like the first Roman Empire, but it was going to come out of it. It was going to be the same group of same philosophy and everything, but it would not be the same as the original Roman Empire as strong. And we see that this new Roman Empire is those 10 toes. Out of those would eventually come this Antichrist. In his next vision, you remember the beast of the Roman, that symbolized the Roman Empire. It had 10 horns, and then there was a little horn that came out, and it broke off 3 of the 10 horns, and then it became the strongest horn, and it led. Horns in the Bible symbolize authority and power. There were 10 horns that symbolized that there was 10 regions that these kings or leaders of these 10 regions. There was a little horn, that is, there was an 11th horn that came out. That was to symbolize the Antichrist. And as he came out, 3 of the other horns did not want to submit to him, and he broke them off. That is, he cut them off. He took their power from them. And he became the one that was powerful over this whole kingdom. If you look at what's happening in the world today in light of the Bible and Scripture, and that's why it amazes me when people say that there's no relevancy to prophecy. All one has to do is begin to read. And you can read that one of the things that that those who are pushing for a one-world government are doing is they're breaking the world into 10 trade blocks. I believe the United States, Canada, and Mexico are a trade block number 1. And then what their goal is eventually to have these individual trade blocks have their individual currencies, which will all tie into a world currency. And then these individual trade blocks will have a leader over them that will oversee the political atmosphere. And you will no longer have sovereign nations, but rather you will have nations compiling trade blocks in the world. This aligns itself exactly with what the Bible said would happen in the last days. Is this the exact way it's going to happen? Is that what's happening? It very well could be. Everything that is what Jesus said would be happening in the last days in Romans, or rather in Matthew chapter 24 and 25, is beginning to happen. You're seeing greater frequency of wars and earthquakes and everything else that was speaking of things, events that would happen before the last days. So all of this can be tied into what Daniel's seeing here. These people that were coming that would be the people of the Antichrist would be the Romans. So a revived Roman Empire. He goes on, that shall come to destroy the city and the sanctuary, and the end thereof shall be with the flood, and unto the end of the war desolations are determined. Now, he's speaking of the very last days, and he's talking about a flood. Is he talking about a literal water flood? I believe that he's talking, if you look at Revelation, and Revelation, I said, gives us more individual insights into these last days that Daniel is revealed to Daniel. The 70 weeks of Daniel, especially the 70th week, is given much more specific information in the book of Revelation. And so God gives us more distinct visions in the book of Revelation of what is going to, prophecies rather, of what is going to happen in the last days. And if you see here, it says here, with a flood. In the book of Revelation, it doesn't talk about a literal physical flood. It talks about a flood of wickedness that's going to come upon the earth and a flood of God's judgments in response to this wickedness. And this is exactly what we're beginning to see in the day in which we live. Just as their knowledge, it says, will increase exponentially, wickedness also appears to be increasing exponentially at an extremely fast rate. Things that were hidden and concealed just 30 or 40 years ago are now out in the open for everyone to not only see, but many of them are being taught in the schools. I wish I would have brought an article that Tom Barnhart had emailed me, and I should have brought it tonight. It was just talking about the different growth of religions in the United States. Do you realize the only religion that is not growing in the United States, and is really not a religion because this is a true belief system, is Bible-believing Christianity. The exponential explosion of things like Hinduism, Islam, Mohammedism, the Mormons, the Wiccan religion, the humanism, all of these were growing at just exponential rates. The Wiccan religion was growing the fastest. It was like at 1,280% or something like that. An unbelievable number of people getting involved in it. Well, why is that? Look at what's on television. You have all these shows that deal with the demonic, and they deal with it in a positive light often, And then also you have things like the movies like Harry Potter and the books like Harry Potter that are being read by just about every kid in America. A lot of schools are using that as reading in their English classes. And what does it do? It teaches the Wiccan religion, teaches witchcraft. And so these things are being promoted. And as evil grows exponentially, God's judgment is going to grow greater and greater. And we see it in the last 7 years. The judgment on the earth is going to be terrific as far as how God deals with the wickedness of men. So we see that, that speaks here of two princes, the Messiah. The Messiah is going to be cut off. The other prince, the Antichrist, his people will appear to have the victory. They'll destroy the temple, destroy Jerusalem. And you've got to believe that Daniel's wondering, what is going on? I thought that we were supposed to go back after the 70 years in captivity. And I thought we were supposed to go back and enjoy the land. But the people had this rebellion that we saw this morning that wouldn't be taken care of until the last week is over that Daniel speaks of. Then he goes on in verse 27. And he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week. Now we're introduced to the 70th week. There's an event, as we said before, just as there was an event that began to put in place the 70 weeks of Daniel, and that was the decree that was issued by Artaxerxes for the nation of Israel to go back and to be able to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. That was the beginning of the 70 weeks. We see that there is also an event that will show the beginning of the 70th week. Remember, there's a parenthesis that occurred. Because if you look at 7 years after Jesus was crucified, would have been 39 B.C. The temple wasn't destroyed until 70 B.C. So either God's a liar, or God has got something where he put the 70th week on hold, which is exactly what the book of Revelation reveals to us. If you go to the book of Revelation, what happened between when the Messiah was cut off, and then which was the end of the 62nd week, and the beginning of the 70th week, what happens there? Well, in the book of Revelation, it's revealed that there's the church comes into being. And the first three chapters of the book of Revelation deal with the church. And if you look at those three chapters, you can see not only the individual churches that had individual issues, and were received commendations and condemnations from the Lord. All of them received both commendations and two of them received just commendations, no condemnations. That was Smyrna and Philadelphia. All of the rest of them, with the exception of one, received commendations and also condemnations. And then one church received only condemnations and no commendations, and that was Laodicea. These are individual churches. You can look in the book of Acts. You will see these churches referred to by the Apostle Paul and other and Luke in the book of Acts, the Apostle Paul in the letters that he wrote to various churches. He mentions just about all of them in his letters. So they were actually churches that existed. But we also know that they also represent eras in church history where there was different problems that the church struggled with, different attacks that Satan had on the church, different things that the church was faithful with during different eras of time. We are living in what many Bible scholars believe, and I would agree with them, is the Laodicean era. It's an era in which the church thinks it's extremely wealthy, but it's extremely poor. It has all kinds of things, but it has no power. And that is because they have turned their back upon Jesus Christ. You've often seen the picture of Jesus standing on the door knocking, and there's no door handle on the door. A lot of people will say that that's evangelism. He's knocking at the door of people's heart, trying to get in, and they have to let him in. Well, that is a truth, but it's not really not what you look at in light of the context of that verse. It's in light of the discussion with the church of Laodicea, and Jesus says that he's knocking. And what is the sad thing is the church should have him on the inside. But instead, Jesus is on the outside knocking to get in, and they don't want to let him in. That's the amazing thing. And that's exactly where you're at with much of the church today. Jesus has been relocated to the outside of the church, and they don't want to let him in. They've created a different Jesus, a different gospel that is comfortable, And they think that they are so wealthy and they have so much and they have so little because they have no power, because they allowed the Lord, the source of their power, to be relocated to outside the church. So we see that what has happened is there's this parenthesis which deals with the church age. The church came into being shortly after Jesus rose from the dead. 40 days after Jesus rose from the dead and ascended into heaven, then you had Pentecost. And at Pentecost, the Spirit came down upon 120 believers in the upper room, and the church was born. And for over 1,900 years now, just over 2,000 years now, we have had a parenthesis in God's plan of dealing with the Jews. The Apostle Paul told us that in Romans chapter 9 through 11, which Menno taught at our conference, showing how that the Jews have been, if you would, set aside for a time being where God isn't dealing with them. He's dealing with the church right now. But the rapture is going to come, and the church will be taken, and then God's going to begin the 70th week, this last week of dealing with the Jews as a nation. He deals with individual Jews. He deals with individuals all the time. And we know that Menno's Jewish, and he's a believer. About half the people or more in his church are Jewish Christians. They are, and the Bible tells us that in the church there's neither Jew nor Greek, male nor female. Why? We are one in Christ. There are three types of people in the world. There are Jews, and then all the rest of the world is Gentiles with the exception of the third group, and that's you and I, Christians. The Bible tells us that Christians are a different group of people from Jews or Gentiles. We have been saved by the and washed by the blood of Christ. We are His bride. We have been placed in created as a new body. The Lord desires that every man, woman, and child in the world would become a believer, would become a Christian. But He also gave us the will to choose. And men, women, and children around the world reject the gospel message and reject Jesus Christ. When they reject Christ, they fall into one of two groups. Either they're Jewish or Gentile by physical descendancy. The Jews are those that are the physical descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. To them have been given certain promises that deal with the land and deal with other issues that God has not fulfilled and that will not be fulfilled until the Lord returns. And at the end of the 70th week, we saw that God was going to deal with Israel as a nation. Israel as a nation, and that their rebellion would be stopped. And once and for all, and they would have come to accept the Messiah as a nation. Today you go to Israel, what is the biggest problem they have? You'd say that the problem that they have is the Arabs. A lot of people say it's the Arabs. You know, they can't get along with the Arabs. That's the biggest problem they got. That's not the biggest problem they got. Other people would say, well, the biggest problem they got is a lack of water. Now, that's a big problem. The Israelis desalinize more water than any other nation in the world. They developed the desalinization techniques where other nations said it couldn't be done to try and deal with their water shortages. So it's a problem, but that's not the biggest problem. The biggest problem the nation of Israel has is they do not acknowledge God, nor do they acknowledge their Messiah. That is the biggest problem they have. If they would acknowledge their Messiah, they would have no problems at all. You see, that is the one time where Israel is not going to have any problems at all is the day they acknowledge Jesus Christ as their Messiah. When He comes at the end of the 70th week and comes to redeem them and save them as the whole world is seeking to have Hitler's final solution worked out under the Antichrist, who's going to make Hitler look like a kindergarten student. When the Lord comes and redeems them, they will look upon Him whom they pierced and they shall all be saved. At that time, who were not saved before as Jews, and they will be saved as a nation, as a whole people. And we see that there's some things that are going to happen when this prince with the small p appears in the last days. And what's going to start the 70th week in motion, where God will begin, once again, it's like you have your alarm clock and you can hit the snooze button so that the alarm doesn't go off, so you can keep sleeping for a while. It's kind of like God hit the snooze button and we're the church age and all of a sudden now the alarm's going to go off. What's going to set things in motion again so that the 70th week's going to come? And it says, and he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week. At the beginning of the 70th week, an event's going to occur where peace and safety will be offered to the Jews in a covenant arranged by this man, the Antichrist, this prince of this people who destroyed Jerusalem and the temple, as Jesus said, after he was crucified and then rose again. He's going to be the leader of this world confederation, and he is going to be able to do it. There's been guys that we were at the prophecy conference in Winnipeg, and they're talking about different things. Do you realize that just about every religion in the world is looking for their Messiah to come? And just about every religion of the world is saying their Messiah is going to be coming soon. Now, I want you to stop and think of the implications of this. You have got Satan, who is going to really, this is his man. He is going to really possess this man. This man will have, he'll be so smooth, he'll be the world's greatest liar. And I don't know if you've ever heard somebody who's a good liar, but they can tell such stories that they can make you believe something that's totally not true at all. This guy is going to be the world's greatest liar the world's ever seen. Why? Because Satan's going to really inspire him. And what he's going to be able to do, he's going to have political power because he's going to be head of this world confederacy. He's going to have military power because he's going to be the one that's directing all the armies of this confederacy. He's going to have economic power because he's going to be the one that's at the head of this world economy, so that consequently he can determine who will make it and who won't make it. So if you want to fight against him, the Bible tells us what happens in that in Revelation 2. All of a sudden you can't buy. You don't take his mark, you can't buy. You don't buy, you don't live. I mean, he's got tremendous power. Not only that, he's going to have religious power. There's going to be a world religious system that is going to be backing him. And not only are they going to back him, they're going to, at the end of the 70th, or the midpoint of the 70th week, rather, they're going to exalt him to be God. And he is going to lift up himself and say, I am God. But I want you to see that this is the power that this guy's got. So do you think that the Middle East, if someone could come with a solution that would cause the Arabs and the Jews to get along, that they would listen if it was a real solution? I mean, you look at the solutions that our guys have been giving, and it's no solutions at all. This man will have the appearance of giving a real solution. He's going to have such a great lie spun and yarn spun that the whole world will believe him, and he's actually going to get all the parties concerned to sign this covenant. And it's going to be a covenant which will have the appearance of peace. And for the first 3.5 years, that's exactly what's going to happen. There will be peace. And you're going to see that Israel is going to be sucked into this thing wholeheartedly, and it's going to put themselves in such a vulnerable spot that when he finally gets them to turn in all their weapons, which is going to be part of the deal, then he is going to come and destroy them. And then is when Jesus, at the end of this week, will return to redeem them. But I want you to see, this guy is great. He's intelligent. He's smooth. He's got all the power. He's got all the... because Satan has aligned it. His last great stand in rebellion against God. And he's got the whole world on his side. It's going to be started out with this covenant. But I want you to know there's one event that has to take place before this covenant is signed. This covenant cannot be signed as long as you and I are here, because the church is not mentioned in the 70th week. The church is not present on the earth. Oh, there's an apostate church that's here. And the apostate church is going to be part of the great world religious confederation that's going to bring and usher this Antichrist in. But true Bible-believing Christians, those who have who are saved in the blood of Jesus Christ, will be gone. The Bible tells us that there's one event that there is no date given for, that we're not given, the prophecies don't indicate it. The Apostle Paul and others don't tell us, because they tell us that we're always to be prepared, because it could happen at any time. And that is the rapture of the church. You and I could be raptured today. We are always to be prepared. We're always to be looking up, for our redemption draweth nigh. The Lord could come at any time and call his bride unto himself. And when he calls them unto himself, it puts into place the events of the last week of Daniel. And the first event will be this world covenant that will be brought in to bring world peace. Now, I want you to understand, what event would cause more chaos in the world than to have millions of people disappear? And if this guy could give an explanation of where these people went to. Already, I was reading some articles. They were talking about, you know, you've got New Agers, and the New Age movement's a big thing in our nation as well as around the world. They're talking about the fact that New Agers and a bunch of other people are really into UFOs. You ever seen all the talk on UFOs, unidentified flying objects, men in outer space? NASA is spending billions of U.S. dollars to try and find life out in space. And just as a little side note, I just heard that they looked through, it would be equivalent to getting one of those little cardboard tubes that paper comes around and putting it up to your eye and going outside and looking through that. That's the equivalent to what NASA looked way out into outer space through the Hubble spacecraft. It was like looking through one of those little tubes. And they found literally, I don't know, thousands of more galaxies. I think it might even been into the millions of more galaxies that they didn't know they were there. And that's like looking through one of those little tubes. That's not getting the panoramic view. I mean, we have no clue of God's creation, of the vastness of it. And yet we're spending millions of dollars. But anyway, the UFOs are constantly in the news. They've got programs on cable TV discussing UFOs, discussing extraterrestrials, discussing all this stuff. One plausible explanation could be that UFOs came and took all those that were unwilling to go with the world plan for peace. Who's standing against peace in the Middle East? True Bible-believing Christians that understand that we're not to be separating the land. We're not to be dividing the land. We're not to be coming against Israel. We're to support Israel. We're to come against the enemies of Israel. We're to stand with Israel. And so all of a sudden, the Antichrist comes to power, and all of a sudden these Christians who've been voicing their opposition to peace talks in the Middle East are gone. And one of the explanations could be, well, you know, there's higher intelligence that had to come, and they sent their UFOs to take them away to be reprogrammed or whatever they come up with. But whatever thing he's going to come up with, he's going to have a plausible explanation that will quell the fears of the world and will usher even greater authority to him. So we see that he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week. And in the midst of the week, he shall cause the sacrifice and the oblation to cease. Now what he's going to do is he's going to allow the Jews, as I mentioned, right now you can go to Israel, they have the Temple Mount Society where they are seeking to rebuild the temple. They've got all they've gathered together all the different utensils for the temple. They've rebuilt them and structured them according to the specifications they find in the Old Testament. And they are preparing to build the temple. The temple will be rebuilt by Jewish people. This man will allow these Jewish people to offer sacrifices at the temple, but at 3.5 years, he's going to cause the sacrifices to stop. And not only is he going to cause the sacrifices to stop, he's going to cause the Jews to quit worshiping God according to the Bible. He says, the oblation to cease. For the overspreading of an abomination, he shall make it desolate. There's going to be the abomination of desolation. He's going to desecrate the temple. Now, in the book of Revelation, we're given a clearer picture of exactly what he's going to do. He is going to enter the temple. He's going to enter the Holy of Holies. He's going to declare himself to be God. And he is going to do things that to the world would appear that only God could do. Although Satan is a great deceiver, and he will not be able to do the real things of God. Much like Jannes and Jambres could do miracles to a certain point, faking the miracles of Moses, it got to a certain point, and God would not allow them any further, and God prevented them from mimicking his miracles. This man will appear to be able to do things, but he has not the power of God. He is not God, but he will deceive the world. He will declare himself to be God and establish and demand worship of the whole world. And then it goes on, and even until the consummation, and that determined shall be poured out upon the desolate. In other words, he's saying there's coming at the end of this period the consummation of all the wickedness. It'll come to a climax. It's going to come to a close. And it's going to be God judging the world. So we see that this is going to be the 70th week of Daniel. And we see that The activities of the coming prince are the following, just to summarize. He's going to make a covenant with many people to begin the 70th week. He's going to hold a position of king of a confederated Roman Empire, and it'll be a world empire. Most, but not all, Jews will accept this covenant. We see that the covenant is designed to last for 7 years, but at the midpoint, he will break this covenant, and he will cause the Jews not to be able to worship, and then he will declare himself God. They will be forced or imposed to worship him, and then he will commit Israel's loyalty. He will demand Israel's loyalty be to the Antichrist, and then he will turn on them and seek to ultimately destroy them. And this is the last week that Daniel is speaking of, the 70th week of Daniel. The end of this week, we see what happens in the book of Revelation. The Lord returns, and this is what Daniel is speaking of in this last chapter, until the consummation, and that determined, shall be poured upon the desolate. God's wrath and judgment will be poured out upon those who seek to come against God. And it will ultimately lead to Armageddon, the destruction of the armies of the world that have come to destroy Israel. It'll lead to the judgment of all unbelievers, and it'll lead to the Antichrist and the false prophet being thrown into the lake of fire. It'll lead to Satan being bound for 1,000 years, and then at the end of that time, we see the new heavens and the new earth, Satan cast into the lake of fire eternally, and we entering into eternity with God. But we shall rule and reign with him for 1,000 years as we come with him at the end of the 70th week. Now, if you were Daniel, and you've been expecting everybody to go back to Israel, and the nation of Israel just to all of a sudden now it's going to get along, and you're given instead a picture of 490 years of really God's final judgment on Israel for their wickedness, but the purpose of it is to bring them back to righteousness, and that it will be consummated with that occurring. This is something that no other prophet had seen, and now Daniel sees. And it's an amazing thing. And it gives us a picture into the day in which we're living. And we should understand that at any time the Lord could come and take his church away, and these events could, this last 70th week, could be in operation, could begin. And this man could come to power. Someone asked me, well, how do they know who the Antichrist is? We don't. Satan's always had his man. Satan has always had a man so that when the time came, he could bring him to the forefront. He had Hitler. He had Genghis Khan. He had Alexander the Great. He had all kinds of men down through the ages that were willing to follow him for power and authority and money and whatever. So he's always had his man. But this man is going to be the one. And he very well could be alive on the earth today. So what should we do? Well, we should realize that this is true. And we should realize that we should count the number of our days, that we have the opportunity to share the gospel with those that do not know it, so that they will be part of the bride of Christ, to be caught up with the Lord in the air, and that they understand what is true and what is real, and that they're not duped into believing the lies of this world and be sucked in to following this man. That they would follow the true prince and not the false one. Let's just close in prayer. Lord, I pray that you would help us to understand the hour and the day in which we live. And Lord, I pray that you would help us to trust and believe in you. And help us to see the lateness of the hour, that we're living in the latter days, that the 70th week could start at any time. And Father, there's one event that must happen before it does, and that's the rapture of your church. And you said you did not know the day or the hour, but only the Father. And Lord, I pray that we would be prepared and that we would be sharing with others the hope that we have in you. This we'd ask in Jesus' name. Amen.